This podcast is brought to you by Mass Corruption, Volume 1, The Cops, autographed by Howie Carr himself, not an auto pen. Get your copy now at HowieCarrShow.com and click on Store, Limited Supply.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
What the French call les incompetents.
Read Grace's work in The Spectator and see her recommended reading at GraceCurleyShow.com.
Guys, I'm eating junk and watching rubbish. You better come out and stop me.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley, host of the Grace Curley Show.
Grace Curley.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
Taylor! That was the best Christmas gift you could have gotten me. That was spectacular.
Oh, I can return the other thing at Amazon. Thanks.
I love it. I love, love, love it. You know what's an underrated line from Home Alone? You guys know I love Home Alone. I've already watched it like six times. Home Alone 1 and Home Alone 2. I really like Home Alone 2 as well because I love the hotel and the New York of it all. But I love in Home Alone, the original Taylor, when they're all packing to get ready. And it's an underrated line. The little kids are getting ready. And the same sister who says, you're what the French call les incompetents, she sees her brother Jeff come out with his suitcase. And you know what she says to him? She says, I hope you didn't just pack crap, Jeff. And I don't know why. It's like, she's 10. She can't be more than 10. And she says that. That movie is one of the best. I've also been watching a lot of The Grinch, the original Grinch, and my daughter loves that right now. So that's one of the top ones. But I love... Oh, and Taylor, the other day, I listened to the Home Alone soundtrack when I grabbed my daughter around. And I was listening to it, and I said, this soundtrack, you know, they must have said to John Williams, come up with whatever you can do. It's a kid's movie. And then he hits them with, somewhere in my... It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's like Michael Caine in Muppet Christmas Carol. Remember, you're playing with a bunch of Muppets, so have fun. I'm going to play this as serious as a heart attack.
Yeah, there's always these memes about it. But I was listening to the soundtrack, and I thought, this soundtrack is just, it's so perfect. It must have won an Oscar. So I do a little Googling. I'm like, did John Williams win an Oscar for the Home Alone soundtrack? He didn't. He was nominated for two, Taylor. Care to guess who he lost, which movie he lost it to?
1990, was it a Rob Reiner film?
I don't think so. Okay. Dances with Wolves.
Oh, okay.
And then I said to my mom, who remembers the soundtrack from that? She actually did. She started singing it. And I
really?
Was like, oh, okay.
What was that song?
I don't even know. She's got a steel trap, though, Mama Curly. She remembers these things. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Taylor, for that lovely Christmas intro. Can't get to that soon enough. I have a lot of things I want to update you on. First of all, we're going to have a wonderful show. If that intro wasn't a sign, then this is. We've got John Carney coming on in the 1 o'clock hour. He's going to run through what we've got on the economic front, what we have to look forward to in 2026, and whether or not this thing is, as Scott Bessin said, the Treasury Secretary, if it's going to get revved up, if we're going to see the big, beautiful bill in action, we're going to see the repercussions for some of these policies, and hopefully the golden age, as Trump puts it. Well, but there's also all of these kind of crazy stories that are unfolding, not just Rob Reiner, which is tragic and awful, and we've talked about that yesterday, but also we have the Brown University shooting. And I want to start with Rhode Island, and we'll get into Australia, we'll get into everything else. But the manhunt continues, if you can believe it, for the Brown University shooter. And now we've got a $50,000 reward on the line, the FBI offering this hefty sum for anyone who can help identify the shooter. And we also now have surveillance footage of him on a street in Providence, you know, kind of surveilling the area that he was eventually going to shoot. Now, I want to take you back to Luigi Mangione, because after Luigi Mangione shot the CEO in Manhattan, we got the picture, Taylor, of his face. Like, he too had a mask on. That's another COVID thing. Everybody wears masks. And it used to be you saw someone with a mask on. That was like, see something, say something. Hey, there's a guy here on the corner with the mask on. But now, because of COVID, it's kind of muddied the waters. People see someone with the mask and they go, could be up to something weird. Also could just be still in that COVID crazy TDS kind of world. So a lot of times people ignore that. So this guy has a mask on, but Luigi Mangione had a mask on. But then they got a shot of him. I think it was from like a 7-Eleven or something. And he had very distinctive eyebrows. He had eyebrows that you saw those and you went, I know that guy.
Yeah, so Eugene Levy was brought in for questioning along with Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, you saw those eyebrows. You're like, that someone's going to recognize that cat. And there are several distinguishing characteristics of this guy, though. That's the weird thing. Even though they're not about his face, it's too blurry to see his face, Taylor. None of the specific things that might make this guy, I think they're definitely going to make this guy identifiable to somebody, have to do with his face. They have to do with the fact that he's a portly sucker. He's a chubby man. His body reminds me, and this isn't body shaming. This is just trying to, you know, help the cause here of trying to find this guy. I would say it's reminiscent of, remember the characters in Alice in Wonderland, Tweedledee and Tweedledum?
Yes.
How they had kind of big midsections and tiny legs.
Yeah, and they kind of waddled.
Waddled. We had a caller yesterday who called in and said, Grace, you guys got to check out the gait of this guy. The guy has a weird gait. Someone should be able to figure it out. It kind of looks like he's bow-legged or something. And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe, sure. Then I saw the video and I thought he was onto something because that was definitely a weird gait. The other thing he did that I've seen people on social media talking about is he put his hands behind his back and kind of, he was trying to look nonchalant at one point, and he put his hands behind his back. And I saw someone point this out, and this is all speculation, okay? But I thought there was something to it. Someone wrote, that is something that you typically see of someone European. Like that body posture of like hands behind the back, or of an academic, of a professor or something. Now, of course, that could be totally wrong. But when we're trying to figure this out, I did watch that and I thought, that person, I kind of get that. That's not something Taylor, I wouldn't picture you walking a street corner and sticking your hands behind your back and kind of doing this rocking back and forth. It was a very specific kind of body language that now people are trying to dissect. I don't think that's probably going to be...
Gives like hall monitor, security guard, you know, Walmart cop vibes.
Lecturing professor, maybe, perhaps. Who's telling you like, hey, if you'd only read the book, then maybe you would know and you wouldn't be in this predicament. There was something weird about it. And so people are kind of breaking that down. But here's something there's no question of. Like I said, that's all speculation. Here's something you don't have to speculate about. There's been a massive lack of cohesion and basic competence on catching this guy and on handling this situation. When it comes to how this emergency was handled, I think the university bears a lot of the blame. I also think the state officials, the cops, it was a Charlie Foxtrot, to put it mildly. And hopefully this footage and the fact that the guy, I think, will be identifiable to someone, puts an end to this nightmare. But there's going to have to be an audit. There's going to have to be an evaluation of these response strategies, which were lacking, and an investigation into the failure. And also, I would give a tip. Howie yesterday was talking about the Rhode Island AG. And I forgot, Taylor, that he was in charge when that drunk lady was freaking out at the bar and was asked to leave by the cops. And she put on this whole performance. It involved a lot of screaming. It involved a lot of, you know, sloppiness. And I forgot, you know, Yeah. And I forgot that this guy was involved. But I did see him at a press conference. And the press conferences are weird because it's like they're really withholding stuff, but it doesn't seem like they're withholding anything because it's helping the investigation. It seems like they're just disorganized. They're like, oh, we're going to put that on the website. Why don't you just tell us now since you're holding a press conference? Whatever. I see this AG, and he's got a lot of attitude for someone who's in a lot of bleep. Do you notice that? It's like I find that this is something, a habit that people have when – you know that you've messed up and you know that you're in trouble. You try to go on the offensive and you kind of try to spin it and you project. So he's getting really lippy with people asking basic questions about this. And someone else is speaking at the podium and he's like in the background, let me say something about that right now. I'm going to tell you something. You listen to me. Maybe you don't do the tough guy routine. Maybe you're not really in a position to be yelling at us. You know what it reminded me of? And this is a little bit of a throwback. Remember the brawl in Cincinnati where that group of black people attacked those two white people and just beat the crap out of them? And then you had the Cincinnati police chief, and she got up and was lecturing. It was like she was yelling at us because she was incompetent. And she's talking about the media and taking things out of context, and this is why this is a problem. And I'm watching, and I'm going, oh, no, you, oh, sweetie, dear, honey, you've misread this situation.
I think what they should be angry about is nobody called the police.
You've misread this. We're not the ones in trouble here, okay? We're not the ones who are going to be lectured and yelled at. You're actually the one who should be eating a little bit of humble pie and maybe handling this better. So we have that to break down. That's my tip for these politicians. Tone down the hotshot routine because no one has an appetite for it, okay? No one is, you know, you're all acting like, listen to me, this is how it's going to work. Well, you still haven't caught the guy. So I don't think you're really doing as great a job as you think you're doing, obviously. Now, in the aftermath, we also have to talk about Australia, because in the aftermath of the deadly massacre that occurred over the weekend, in which a father and son duo of deranged ISIS-linked psychos were, you know, killed, I think the number's up to 15 people celebrating Hanukkah, the knee jerk from the prime minister there is to blame two things. Okay? And if you think it's going to be ISIS, if you think it's going to be radical Islam, wrong. Two things that are really getting a lot of the blame here. One, gun control laws. A need for stricter gun control. And two, right-wing extremists. When in doubt, blame it on right-wing extremists. Now, Australia, it's worth noting, we talked about this yesterday, it bears repeating, Australia has some of the toughest gun laws in the world. But he's convinced, I guess, this Australian Prime Minister, Albanese, he's convinced that they just need a few more. They just need a few more pieces of legislation, and we're supposed to believe that that would have made the difference. And so USA Today had a story. It said, speaking to reporters, Australia's prime minister said that his government would be urgently examining the need for tougher gun laws, and that if there is any action required in terms of legislative response, we will certainly have, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's going to look into legislative response. He knows more gun legislation isn't going to work. They've got the NFA. They did the huge gun buyback program, you know, all the way back to 1996. They have the strictest gun laws in the world. And this guy had a gun legally, from what I've been reading. And so he knows that examining these gun laws is not going to work. How about examining your acceptance of radical Islam in Australia? How about examining the need for public officials who don't whitewash anti-Semitic radical ideologies hell-bent on destroying Jewish people, and as a matter of fact, destroying all of Western civilization? How about you crack down a little bit on that instead of pretending that one more gun law would have changed this? If you are even as close to as courageous at condemning this kind of terrorism, which this is an example of radical Islam, of ISIS ties, that terrorism, not right-wing terrorism. When that happens, you can condemn right-wing terrorism, but right now you should focus on this. And all you're saying when you say, oh, we're going to do more gun control, we're going to focus on more gun control, all you're ensuring with that is that the victims of these shootings, and I hope another one doesn't occur ever, but the victims, people who were at Bondi Beach, the victims who were left for 20 minutes as bullets rained down on them, that the next time it happens, and again, I hope it doesn't, but that all of those people will once again be defenseless. They'll be sitting ducks. They'll be waiting for the cops to come until one person, who God bless him, had more courage than I think 99% of people, charged at one of the shooters, and he himself was shot in the process. But all you're ensuring is that people are going to continue to, the good people, the people who are celebrating Hanukkah on the beach, that was their biggest problem, was, hey, I'm out here trying to celebrate Hanukkah, that they are sitting ducks and defenseless. And you're pretending that the issue is right-wing extremism and a need for more gun control. It's dishonest and it's pathetic, but that's where we're at. We have so much to discuss today. We have updates on the Trump administration. Susie Wiles sat down with Vanity Fair. Now she's saying they wrote a hit piece about her. I don't know. I like Susie Wiles. I don't know what she was thinking sitting down with Vanity Fair. We're going to talk about that. We have so much more to get to. Pete Hegseth in the news today. Like I said, John Carney. So it's going to be a great show. It's 844-500-4242. Also, for the Maine listeners, big updates when it comes to Maine. You guys are giving Minnesota a run for its money. If you're a taxpayer in Maine, you should be angry for many reasons, but especially for the fraud that's occurring in your state. We'll talk about that. But right now, I want to discuss steaks, Taylor. Steaks are always a good idea. But not just any steaks. Omaha steaks. Omaha steaks are such good quality. And the cool thing about this is if you're giving it as a gift, you can select based off the person what you're putting in their box. So if I was making a box for Jared, I put in a lot of hot dogs. If I was making a box for Taylor, it'd be red meat all the way. But if I was making a box for Matt, I might do some pork. I might do some chicken. There's a lot of different things you can throw in, but here's the constant. Everything, no matter if you're doing pork, chicken, seafood, beef, everything is high quality, and you never have to worry about that part.
Did you make your selections when last week?
I forgot.
No?
I forgot.
Oh, boy, I can't promise anything now.
Oh, no! Well, no, did you go through it already?
Maybe.
I don't blame you. I might do a special trip and grab some stuff because I am, you know what I'm craving? I'm craving the burgers. It's funny. It's like this time of year, I know you got to stand outside to do it, Taylor. I know you don't mind that. You're always looking for an escape there. But I would love an Omaha burger right now. I think it's good all year round.
They're fantastic. They don't really need anything. They're perfect just as they are. I think I might snag the chicken. I've been doing chicken for my lunches, chicken and rice. So I'm going to try that out. I don't think I've tried the Omaha Steaks chicken before.
Now, how do the chickens at your house feel about that?
They eat chicken, too.
Oh, oof.
Chickens are cannibalistic.
I don't like this. This is reminding me of the old days with Biden talking about his uncle. We'll make sure that when you go to omahasteaks.com, you're also getting a great deal because we're giving you a $35 off code if you use code GRACE at checkout. So terms apply. See site for details. It's omahasteaks.com. Don't forget to use promo code GRACE to save that extra $35 off. Get gourmet gifts and all of your holiday favorites at omahasteaks.com with code GRACE. We will be right back.
Chickens.
Follow Grace on X at @G_Curly. This is the Grace Curly Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curly Show. Let's do the poll question here. We're going to take a lot of calls in the next segment when we come back. But right now, we'll do the PQ, and it has to do with what's going on at Brown University. The manhunt continues. Today's poll question is brought to you by Western Razor. Buy American and support America with the razor that is 100% made in the USA. Save 10% with code GRACE at westernrazor.com. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is how will the Brown University shooter be caught? Solid police work, someone who recognizes him will turn him in, or he'll turn himself in.
Someone who recognizes him. I think his body is very distinguishable, and his way of walking in that video, I think it's going to tip someone off, and it's $50,000. I think plenty of people are willing to turn in someone if it's $50,000.
89.
And, you'd like to think they're doing it because it's the right thing, but I think the money talks.
89% say someone who recognizes him will turn him in. 8% say solid police work.
2%, yeah, no.
2% say he'll turn himself in. You see, they were, kicking the snow around. Nobody from Canton got over there with a snowblower, leaf blower. Or anything like that? Give the FBI a few tips on how to conduct a thorough investigation when you're looking for something?
Yeah, we always think it's Massachusetts that's the issue. Maybe it's just like a New England thing. Maybe this is just a problem with the police here. And again, as Taylor always says, if you're a good cop here in Massachusetts or Rhode Island or Maine, we're not talking about you. But there were definitely some things that raised concerns. And you know what, Taylor? Also, I thought was weird, and I think he was the chief of police who was doing the press conference. They asked about what the shooter shouted, because there's speculation that if he was going into a classroom that was typically occupied by a teacher of Jewish studies, that maybe he shouted something like Allahu Akbar. That's just speculation. And he said he's not going to say. But my question is, do you not know or are you not saying? Because there's a difference between the two. We'll break it down when we come back.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Yelled something right before his shot came in. Can you tell us what that was?
Yeah, it's part of the investigation, John and Wolf. Yeah.
The only reason I asked that though is, for instance, like with the Unabomber, his brother recognized the writing. So is it? It's possible a friend or family member might recognize if the person said something that was significant.
Correct.
So that's why you don't. Other than the 9mm, is there anything else inside that auditorium?
No, that's correct. And listen, like I said earlier, investigations will bring us to evidence that we need to collect in order to be able to prosecute.
With that being said,
we're going to continue to collect evidence. And if it leads us to something to that nature that's going to be extremely helpful for us to identify somebody, we'll be the first ones to put it out.
All right. So I don't have a lot of faith in Colonel Oscar Perez Jr. He's the chief of police there in Providence after that response, because to me, it's very obvious what's going on here. Like, either you don't know, which you should just say, we don't know yet, or you know, and you're going to pretend you're not telling us because it's going to jeopardize the investigation. And in actuality, you're just trying to either not confirm a narrative that people are suspicious of, or not, you know, have backlash against an ideology or a community that's been criticized a lot recently. You don't want the Norm MacDonald to take effect, where there's backlash if he shouted something like Allahu Akbar. He might not have even shouted that, but my problem here is just be straightforward. It's not up to you to decide how people are going to respond to something. It's up to you to tell us what you know and to get it done. Now, if you think, oh, this is a critical piece and we can't jeopardize people finding out about this, then that's one thing. But that's not what he's saying here. It seems to me like he's being very, he's too cute by half. Like, he's trying to be cute about it. Oh, well, the investigation, something doesn't smell right to me, Taylor.
I just saw a post that said if Buddy Cianci were still mayor, this guy would have been caught already. That's so true.
It's really pathetic. And I also saw, and actually we have sound here, because I thought this was a really good point on Fox today. Callahan Walsh, I think he's from America's Most Wanted. This is what he said about, you know, his suspicions about this person after seeing the surveillance video. Can I have cut two, please, Taylor?
It seemed like this guy knew, either is the luckiest guy alive or he knew exactly where those cameras were pointed, because, as you mentioned, over 800 cameras on that campus and hardly one shot of this individual. It's astonishing. You know, it's really mind-blowing, and that's why I believe that the guy does have a serious connection to the school. He knew where he was going, he knew what he was doing, and he was targeting those individuals.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people suggest maybe he's a disgruntled employee. I mean, that wouldn't be the first time that's happened. And it's very much a possibility. But we're just waiting now. There's $50,000. Hopefully someone comes forward. It wouldn't shock me if someone did. And draws a connection of who this guy is and why he did this. I also wanted, since we're talking about some of these stories that haven't gotten as much attention in the last few days because of the news cycle, I wanted to mention here that a report came out that showed the Biden administration was warned, Joe Biden was warned, that the hundreds of Afghan nationals he was airlifting and bringing into the United States, proudly, by the way, he bragged about that. Oh, I'm sorry, that's my computer. I thought that was the sound. That the Afghan nationals had terrorist ties, and he was aware of it. And they were being allowed into the country without proper vetting, and he chose to ignore those warnings. This is Red State, but this is according to an official report that people had flagged to the Biden administration that over 1,000 Afghans with ties to the Islamic State and other terrorist organizations who had entered the U.S. as part of Operations Allies Welcome, which resettled persons who had aided operations in Afghanistan, those concerns apparently fell on deaf ears. Because what other kind of ears were there in the Biden administration? They didn't seem to, you know, there was no amount of warnings, or we already found out now that they warned Biden about inflation. They warned him about opening the border. They warned, there was plenty of people in his orbit who had the wherewithal to say, this isn't a good idea. This is how you destroy a country. He just didn't seem to care, or that was the goal that he was going for. Another big story, and I want to get your takes if you're listening right now, but I also want to get my producer's take, Taylor. Susie Wiles does this interview with Vanity Fair. It's getting a little play today. And a lot of people in the cabinet actually sat down for the interview. I don't know why, but now there's quotes coming out that she described Trump as having the personality of an alcoholic. She talked about J.D. Vance, and she talked about conspiracy theories, and has some of these people believe conspiracy theories, and just a lot of quotes that she's not defending or really denying. She's saying things were taken out of context, but she's not denying the quotes. And I think that's because there's probably audio of it. But here's where I stand. Why are you sitting down? And if you look at the photos, they had access to the White House. They were doing these photo shoots for this Vanity Fair. Why are they doing this, Taylor? What is there to gain? Like, that's what I keep coming back to here. And I know people are going to say, geez, Grace, you're really killing the vibes this week so far. It's like very anti-Trump. That's not how I mean it to be. I just have to tell you how I feel. I'm not seeing any of these things. Yesterday with the Rob Reiner post, today with Susie Wiles talking to Vanity Fair, I'm starting to worry here that we're really off message, and that we are heading into these midterms in kind of a disaster mode.
Yeah, I don't understand what anybody would think the advantage is talking to unfriendly media, or really any media, that's just doing a general profile. If they want to ask about a specific story and you're the person that has been designated to talk about that story from the administration, by all means, go ahead. But if they're just doing a general profile and trying to get, what's it like? Let's get the palace intrigue inside the Trump White House. Why give them that red meat? Why even sit down with that? It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I'm sure you've had people, I've had people come up to me and say, hey, what's it like? You know, what's the inside scoop? I've got a job. You know, I like where I work. I like my job, and I like the paycheck that I get for my job. I'm not going to put any of that in jeopardy just to satisfy your curiosity. There's no upside to me whatsoever. I mean, Susie Wiles, she's at the top of the food chain. What does she think is out there for her that she's going to get from giving people like Vanity Fair an exclusive interview with her? It doesn't make sense.
And she's supposed to have a really good read on dealing with the media. That's the part of it that I find so bewildering, is you're the person who is supposed to steer the ship and avoid these kind of pitfalls, and you've fallen into one of these traps, which I think is very easily avoidable. But the other part of it too, Taylor, is you talked about satisfying someone's curiosity. Where I worry about it is I look at this and say, are you looking for respect or praise, or are you looking to be liked by the people who write articles for Vanity Fair or the people who buy Vanity Fair? Because you should know by now. You should have known five years ago. But you should definitely know by now that that's not going to happen. And I've criticized Trump for not understanding that, because he continuously talks to people who he shouldn't be talking to. Michael Wolff, you know, he sits down with all these people. He brings them into the White House. And I don't mind if he's doing like a CBS interview and he says to them, we're going to film it and we're going to release it. So if you cut it up, we're going to sue you. And he's been burned in that way before. And he's won a lot of those suits before. Now he's suing the BBC, by the way, for, what is it, $10 billion. And so I don't mind that if you go in aggressively and say, I'm going to sit down, we're going to get this out there, and you're not going to bamboozle us. But the magazine interviews are, that's especially risky, because you're going to be taken out of context. That's what they do. That's mm-hmm. In what world are they not doing that? And so my question is, did you do this because you actually thought, oh, well, I'm going to win them over? Like, they're going to come into the White House and they're going to like me so much that they're going to, once in the last 10 years, they're going to write something nice about the Trump administration. That is boneheaded to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Trump is going to start thinking people are getting too comfortable around here and loose lips sink ships. Because if you remember back in the first administration, I think by this point in the first Trump administration, Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, was already gone. He had left the job, and Trump appointed.
I mean, there
were probably several cabinet members that Trump had already rotated through in the first administration, and I don't think there's been any significant changeover in this administration up to this point. And this, something like this, might lead Trump to say it's time to shake things up a little bit and get a new chief of staff.
Part of the
allure of Susie Wiles was the mystique. We didn't know all that much about her.
Exactly.
We just knew she was this power player and was able to make these big moves and big decisions and had this knack for politics. And that satisfied me. If Trump trusts in her and she knows what she's doing, by all means, go right ahead. And she's been great up to now.
Yeah, this is a big risk for her. And I was thinking about that today because now she's coming out. She put out this statement. Actually, I'll read it to people. She put out this statement saying that she was taken out of context. So the article published early this morning is a disingenuously framed hit piece on me and the finest president, White House staff, and cabinet in history. Significant context was disregarded, and much of what I and others said about the team and the president was left out of the story. She goes on, blah, blah, blah. And all the comments are like, you're the chief of staff. Didn't you know this? Didn't you already know this? Why did you do this interview? We talk about not answering questions that they're based off a false premise. This is why do an interview if you know it's baked in, if you know they already have it written. It's like when they post an obit about someone who's 95 years old and is a rock star and has been around forever. They've already written it. They're just waiting to hit send. It's the same thing with these interviews. They're not changing their minds because you talk some sense into them. In the same way that when I go to Thanksgiving and there's someone who disagrees with me, I have an uncle who's, you know, hates Trump. I'm not changing his mind in the course of a 45-minute meal over stuffing. So I don't try. You can't feed into this. It's just not worth it. And I agree with you. I think this could be, it could be time for a shakeup here. With Susie Wiles, I think this is the kind of thing that might get you canned. And I like Susie Wiles, too, and I think she did an incredible job during the campaign. So I'm not disparaging her in that front, but this is a mistake. And
absolutely. The cliche is that there's no such thing as bad press. Well, there absolutely is. Okay,
we've seen it over the last 48
there's
hours.
There's no question about it. And I used to be a believer, there's no such thing as bad press, bad publicity. But if there's no upside to something, then it's bad publicity.
Yeah. No, I agree, and it's just, this has happened so many times. It usually happens from Trump himself.
And the pictures. I mean, who allowed those? Who signed off on those?
But again, the pictures just go to show you. It's like, this is a hit piece. And now she's telling us, well, they wrote a hit piece. Well, I could have told you that. I could have warned you about that. And I'm a radio host. Like, I'm not the chief of staff of the White House, but I could have told you they were going to write a hit piece on you. And now everyone's rushing to explain it as 4D chess or, you know, why I'm not getting it. I've been getting this a lot over the last 24 hours about all the things I'm not getting. And it's like, some things are just dumb. Like, some things are just bad decisions. And this, to me, is one of them. And I want to say on that front, one other thing about the Trump-Rob Reiner. And I'm not going to harp on it too much because I said my piece. People know how I feel about it. But one thing I've noticed is that we are often accused as Trump supporters of being brainwashed, right? Like if he told us to jump off a bridge, we jump off a bridge. We're drinking the Kool-Aid. It's the Jim Jones effect. We will listen to whatever he says. We'll do it. We'll never disagree with him. We'll defend everything he does. And the only thing I've seen over the last 24 hours, whether it be Senator John Kennedy, whether it be Scott Jennings, whether it be Bonchi from Red State, every single person I follow, every conservative whose opinion I maybe not trust, but whose opinion I listen to and informs, you know, what I read and what I do, every single conservative that I like out there has condemned this and said, and I don't even want to say condemn, but just said, this is stupid. This is stupid. This was a no-win situation. There was no reason for this. And so for a bunch of people who are supposedly in a cult who can't criticize Trump, I've seen a lot of us criticizing Trump, which kind of defeats this whole narrative that we're all in lockstep and he can do whatever he wants. There's this sense in the Republican Party that if someone's doing something I think is hurting the Republican Party, I'm going to tell them because I want them to stop that so we have a better chance. And that's a little tip for the Democrats. Maybe if you had done that a little bit more often with your guy, maybe if you had come out every once in a while and said, I don't like what happened with Afghanistan. I don't think this guy knows what he's doing. I don't like the fact that he's talking to ghosts. I think that's a weird thing that he said. I think that's inappropriate. Maybe we wouldn't have been in the situation and in the current situation that we're in. But I've seen plenty of conservatives who have no issue, whether it be Howie Carr, like I said, Scott Jennings, all of these people coming out and saying that wasn't the right move. I wouldn't have done that. And it doesn't mean that when you say that you're disavowing, you know, Donald Trump, or you're not supporting him, but you can call a spade a spade. And that's very different from the Democrat Party. There's none of that with the Democrats. They stuck by Joe Biden through thick and thin, and I think they're paying the price for it now. 844-500-4242. We'll take your calls, but in the meantime, I want to talk to you about something very, very important. And that is the Eden Pure Gen 40 heater, because it's that time of year. You know, we're officially playing the Christmas theme song, Taylor, which means it's getting cold. And when it gets cold, you need the Eden Pure Gen 40 infrared heater. It's such a great product. And in the Cormier house, it's gone through the generations.
Yes, we've used it my father used to buy Eden Pure heaters after kerosene was not the way to go anymore. And we've loved Eden Pure products for a very, very long time. And the Gen 40 I was using it in your office the other day, Grace.
Our office, sir.
Our office, yes.
My office is your office.
Oh, my God. The oscillation on that is fantastic because it goes two different ways. It rotates two different ways. But when it hits you, you feel great because it's that, you know, it warms you right to the bone. It's not this dry heat. It's a very direct heat. I don't know any other way to describe it. It was very chilly the other day and that took care of it. No problem.
Yeah, and with the special radio offer, you can get the Gen 40 infrared heater for just $174. Typically, it's going for $224, but if you use discount code Grace50, you're going to save $50. So that's EdenPureDeals.com. Do what Taylor said. Get the Gen 40 heater. You'll be so happy you did. I know you'll be writing me and saying it changed the game this winter. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Discount code Grace50. Order now before the prices go back up or they sell out. What do you think of the Susie Wiles decision to talk to Vanity Fair? And I will talk to Howie about this at some point, maybe not today, but tomorrow. Because he's often told me this tip, which is like, if you get asked to do an interview with one of these fake news outlets, you just say no, because there's nothing, like Taylor said, there's nothing to gain here. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
Watch the show live. Rumble.com/TheGraceCurlyShow. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. In the next hour, we are going to talk to John Carney about the jobs report, the big jobs report, as Rick Santilli described it. We'll talk about that. And also later in the hour, I want to talk about the fraud going on in Maine. A lot of Mainers have been reaching out to me about this fraud that is being uncovered, not just from the Maine Wire, but now other news networks are starting to drill down on it. They're giving Minnesota a run for its money. Move over, Tim Walz. There's a new knucklehead in town, and her name is Janet Mills. We'll talk about that in the next hour. I wanted to say one more thing, though, and then we're moving on from this. Just because you point out something, you criticize your own side, let's say, the conservative side. I criticized Trump yesterday and today. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be lectured on things like civility and kindness and morality from someone like Keith Olbermann. Like, that's where I draw. I'm saying something's bad because I'm saying it's bad. Like, I don't like that. I don't think that's a good way to comport ourselves and to behave. And I don't think it's a nice thing to do. And forget nice. I don't think it's a decent thing to do. But at the same time, I can say that and also reject lectures from Anna Navarro and from people who did not behave in the way that they are now shocked and appalled at. They didn't behave that way not years ago. I'm talking months ago when Charlie Kirk was assassinated. So thank you for now kind of getting on your high horse and saying to me, see, this isn't very decent. I know that, but I don't need to know that from you. You don't get to point your finger at me because you've never shown decency. It's not even in your DNA. We'll be right back.